Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Believe You Me podcast. Today we have Harrington and Brian in the background, of course, but we have a special guest in the one and only recently retired welterweight contender, Alan Joban. He's staying busy these days in the MMA world. He's a pre-fight, post-fight analyst for UFC. Lost a headphone. That's a good start. He's commentating, I think. What is it? LFA, I think so. But more so important than that, we got lots of shit to talk about. Harrington, show yourself.
What's up, Michael? How you doing?
Doing all right, buddy. How are you?
Doing pretty good, man. Very excited to be doing this show. Super excited about UFC 269 this weekend. I love all, honestly, I get hyped for every Believe You Me before a big pay-per-view.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad. That is what we're here to do, try and provide a little pre-fight hype. Of course, yeah, great fights this weekend. End of the year show, it always kind of delivers, doesn't it? We're just going to wait for Alan Joban before we get into too much. Obviously, there was a little controversy with Dominic Cruz in DC, which I blasted all over my YouTube channel. I wasn't going to put it on my YouTube channel, by the way, because I thought it was kind of sensitive. But then DC did it, and I thought, well, fuck it. And then Cruz spoke about it at a press conference. That's what kind of started the whole thing. But we'll wait for Alan and to come on before we get into that. But yeah, end of the year show. UFC always try and put on a big one. And funnily enough, I was in Vegas yesterday. I spoke to Nunes. I spoke to O'Malley. I spoke to Dustin Poirier. All very, very confident. But I went and did a video in front of the MGM Grand. Because 15 years ago, almost on December 30th, was when I made my UFC debut at the MGM Grand, which was the end-of-year pay-per-view show. So end of year, they always try and put on something special. I got to say, this year, the pay-per-views have been fucking ridiculous from start to finish. And this one is no different.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at last year's. It was Moreno versus Figueiredo. You had Oliveira versus Tony Ferguson, Mackenzie Dern on that card. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there is always that, like, you know, the year's ending, it's one last chance to steal that fight of the year, fighter of the year, the put a capstone on, you know, I mean, you look at like Dustin Poirier's year, right? Coming into yep. January of 2020 as the bout with McGregor looming. Now, two wins over McGregor this year, a win over Charles Oliveira. He can go out, you know, with the 155-pound strap. Who's got a better year than Dustin Poirier?
I don't know. So hold on. Was it Dan Hooker? No, it was Conor McGregor twice. Dan Hooker was last year. Yeah. I mean, he's had a bloody good year. Do you know who's had a better year? I'll be honest. Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira beats him. Of course, it's a better year. But who's he beat? He beat Tony Ferguson. He could beat Dustin Poirier. There was another big win as well. Michael Chandler. Of course, to become the fucking champ. Absolutely. Anyway, I'm not sure where Alan Joban is, so we'll talk about some fun stuff. Oh. Speaking of the goddamn devil, Mr. Joban, I got to say, listen, Alan, that is quite the change. A moment ago, we had Harrington on, and now it's switched to you. You are HD. You are crisp. Dude. You are better looking. You're in shape. You got earbuds. Perfect. Do you know what I mean? Harrington, show yourself again. Look at this for a split screen. Harrington.
Oh, no good. Offense. Pretty good.
You got the Christmas tree up in the house, Alan. Getting all festive.
Trying to get that in the camera. I need some ornaments. You guys have I saw one of your videos. You guys have a bazillion ornaments. I was telling my wife, I was like, we got to put some more ornaments up, babe. We have like 5 ornaments hanging in our tree.
Yeah, no, that's my wife. She's obsessed. She literally is. Like, she doesn't want to see any tree. She just wants, what do you call them, baubles? Just wants the baubles everywhere. And I'm like, babe, that's too much.
It looks good. My wife's from Thailand, right? So she didn't always grow up doing the traditions. So it's kind of on me to kind of carry certain traditions over. which I'm just not great at. So we're kind of,
Do they celebrate Christmas as we know it in Thailand?
Yeah, I believe they always did.
What is it, Buddhist? Is it a Buddhist country?
They're Buddhist, correct. But so I think they always did more of like the holiday Christmas. There wasn't any type of religious meaning. Yeah. But I just don't think it was to the extent that, like, you know, the rest of the world or Americans or whatever, you know, do it over here.
I got a little bit of shit on Twitter the other day because I did put that video on, said, oh, the Christmas tree's up, you know, feeling festive, whatever. And someone goes, oh, kind of ironic, Mike, considering that you're an atheist. And I was like, well, you know, listen, I think it's fair to say that Christmas has become a very commercial enterprise. And I just get into the Christmas spirit for the cultural aspect. It is a cultural holiday, of course, if you're religious and I'm not sure if you are or not. God bless you all. And I hope, you know, I hope this Christmas is as best as they come. But if you're not Christmas, if you're not religious, I can still fucking celebrate it. I can still have some turkey. I can still have a Christmas tree and have a jolly old time.
Are you atheist?
I mean, I don't believe in a higher power of any sort. So yeah. I guess that makes me atheist, right?
Maybe. Well, I believe in it, but yeah, I don't.
Or my agnostic.
Wife is Buddhist, I'm Catholic, yeah. So we just kind of do the right thing.
I don't know what the fuck I am, let's be honest. Alan, thanks for joining the show. Where are you right now? Louisiana?
I'm in Louisiana, man. I'm at home here in Poirier country.
Yeah.
Cormier country.
Are you in Lafayette?
Yeah. So I moved back. I mean, I was living in LA for pretty much my entire fight career, lived in LA for about 20 years. And then after I retired, I felt like it was time to make a switch. So I moved back to Lafayette. For the people, the viewers or whatever that don't know, I'm from Lafayette, Louisiana. Me, Daniel Cormier, Poirier, and a couple of other guys in the UFC all from the same small town, ironically enough. And so my family is all here and that. So it's nice to be around family again.
Do you or some of your extended friends know some of Daniel and Dustin and their extended friends and whatnot?
Somewhat. You know, not that many DC guys. I want to say, how old is DC, man? So I'm 40. DC is what, 43, 44?
No, I think he's 41. I don't. I think 41. He's a little because I'm 42. No, he's probably
You're
42
older than
now. I think I'm his big brother. I do think that.
You were older than DC, man.
I know it's crazy. Well, I look so baby faced. I know. Thank you, Alan.
That must be what it was. Anyway, yeah, I thought DC was a couple of years older. So no, I didn't really know his people. I didn't know Poirier either when I was living here. But moving back, obviously, we share some of the same gyms. When he trains at Gladiators Academy. Tim Crater and all those guys, we have that connection.
I've got a question for you. So living in Lafayette, do you ever make it down to Bourbon Street? And if so, have you ever seen the Bourbon Street bitch? Because I'm still looking for this guy.
Mike, let me tell you, man. So like, you know, been knowing you for a minute now and follow you on social media for a minute now. And so I see a lot of the stuff that you post. And I remember when you and your family went to New Orleans, Louisiana. Mm. And I was kind of, I think it was around the time I just moved back. So in a way, in my heart, I was kind of thinking, man, I hope he has a fun time with his family because it kind of represents where I just moved back home.
It reflects on you a little bit.
Somewhat. Even though New Orleans, you know, you don't say Hollywood Boulevard is all of LA. Hollywood Boulevard is freaking crazy.
Yeah.
Bourbon Street is much like that. Nonetheless, I saw you guys went there. It was raining. It was humid. You guys went and did the swamp tour, I think,
which honestly was one of the best days. My son and I will never forget it. We cannot wait to go back. You got to do it, buddy.
I've got to go. Look, you know, granted, I've grown up playing in the bayous and swamps. And I swam in some lake the other day with this 20-foot alligator that was like near. So I'm used to it, but I've never done the tour. So I saw that great stuff. And then I saw the video of that freaking jackass that punched you on Bourbon Street. I couldn't believe it, man. I felt horrible. And then I put myself in your shoes and I was like, how would Mike react? How would I react if somebody on Bourbon Street kind of punched me, but it didn't really hurt me that much. But it's like, am I going to start fighting with this guy, especially the way the world is right now or COVID and you're with your family. You don't know what's going to happen. Nonetheless, I applaud you, man. I think you did the right thing and not going after the guy, because who knows if there was 20 guys going to jump you or they're going to put out a weapon, because shit happens all the time in New Orleans, man. It's just a block off of Bourbon Street's crazy, but people venture off a block of Bourbon Street and they don't get seen again. So, I felt bad that happened to you.
No. It was the highlight of my trip. And let me tell you,
I screenshotted that guy's face. And when I went to New Orleans, in my mind, I was like, this guy had on camo pants, right? He had camo pants.
Yeah, camo pants.
Not that he would be wearing, Yeah, not that he's wearing the same outfit.
Every video I've seen him in, he always has the same clothes on. But okay. Listen,
I kept
for me, that was not only one of my highlights because it was hilarious and we're still talking about it to this day, but I did a video on my YouTube channel about it and he did a video. So I spliced it together and put that onto a video on my YouTube channel. That video on YouTube has paid for my trip to New Orleans about five times over. So okay. Thank you very much to the Bourbon Street bitch. But anyway, we're not here to discuss that. We've got a lot of stuff. We've got UFC 269, massive fight card. But we got to talk about this real quick. Yesterday, I'm at the Apex, right? I'm doing some interviews with Nunes, O'Malley, and Dustin Poirier for BT Sport, as I said. And I'm just about to leave, and I popped in to get something or to grab a water or whatever. And I see Cruz and DC. And you know what I'm talking about here because we touched base on it earlier. And I'm sure most people at this point now know what I'm talking about. I had no idea what Dominic Cruz had said, but I walked in. I could see they were doing some kind of, I thought it was an interview, but then it looked like he was getting a little bit of an argument. And then one of the guys from ESPN was like, Mike, you got to get in there. You got to get in and like.
Oh, they kind of pushed you to go in.
Yeah.
This, I thought that was you, man. I thought you just said, I'm
going to jump into any situation anyway. So you didn't have to ask me twice, but he said, Mike, go in and diffuse this a little bit. So I went in being a little silly and jovial and just like trying to make everyone laugh. And, you know, I think it kind of worked, but I didn't know really what I was talking about. It was only afterwards that DC showed me that Cruz at the press conference had been talking a little bit of shit. I mean, each to their own, but I mean, come on, Cruz, no need for that, but whatever, all good.
You know what's wild about that, man? Obviously, we're talking about it.
Here
today.
We go. Here we go.
Press showing this.
Go on then, Brian.
What's the experience like for you when you listen to DC and the guys actually commentate your fight? Like knowing them personally and knowing, you know, how the sausage is made, so to speak.
Well, Anik, to me, does I watch
how
Anik
the sausage
so
is made?
Much homework leading up to a fight. Like it's people have no idea how much homework he has to do to be prepared for that. And the most kudos for me really goes to him. He leads us.
That's true. Anik is on top of everything.
He really is. He's such a professional.
I usually mute it. I love DC. He's my friend. But to me, from my experience, he doesn't do the homework. He wants to get in and out.
Anyway, we've all seen it. The world's seen it. And I don't want to throw.
He elaborates a little more. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he does. And actually, Alan, it's kind of ironic kind of good luck. Pardon me, I'll get closer to the light. There we go. It's so dark and miserable here today. It's like pissing down rain, which is, as you know, in California, Southern California.
Yeah, never happens. So
it's very dark in here. No, you're the perfect guy to have on because you're not only the pre-fight analyst, post-show analyst, you're also, is it LFA? I was just saying before you came on. Is it LFA color, that you commentate for?
Correct.
How would you feel if one of your colleagues did that? I mean, we're not here to talk shit about Dom, and I don't want to stir the pot too much, but it's a big story.
You know, when you text me about this, we're going to jump on the show and probably bring this up. I was just got done watching the video, and immediately my mind went to, was DC thinking with Dom? What are you thinking? What is everybody? Because we had that kind of inner circle, right? It's you've been hearing, who was it? Anthony Smith recently was talking about Conor McGregor, talking about like, our circle, and he meant like our circle of fighters, whatever it made sense or not, our circle of fighters, we have a certain level of respect. Well, the same thing goes with the commentators too, right? We see each other in the green room when we're getting ready and dressed, and we always have a little chit chat, and we work together on the air. Even if you guys are sitting at the doing ringside and me and my guys are at the desk, we have to work back and forth sometimes to kill some space and whatever. So there's a certain level of respect, and we of know how good certain people are, what things. Some people have incredible memories. Some people are more jokesters. I was shocked. I got to tell you, man, when I'm watching this video, I was shocked that Dom just says it without even having to think about it. It was so effortlessly came out of his mouth, man. And Dom, the one thing you can never accuse him of is not being a savage. Dominic Cruz is a savage. Just say that. And about DC, he's not talking about somebody, let's just say, a little less powerful.
John Anik. No offense,
John Anik, or even fighter wise, like a Paul Felder, like a good, like one of the guys.
Okay.
Like DC's the, you know, the Dana White, you know, he's kind of like the big dog of
But hold on. In some ways, that's the perfect guy to talk shit about because there's no way that DC is going to, I mean, of course, we're grown men. Nobody's going to get violent or whatever. And DC is a very calm, level-headed. He's always jovial, always in a good mood, always got something positive to say, you know. So in some ways, he kind of picked a good person to trash a little bit. And you say what you will about Dom, I guess you got to respect that he owned it right there in front of Daniel. I mean, the balls, the brass neck is a British expression, the brass neck on this guy to just sit there right in front of him and then argue his point and try and justify his point. I mean, respect's a weird word, but at least he owned it, if you will.
But I agree, because I agree or not agree with what he said, kind of calling DC out like that wasn't, let's be honest.
No.
It wasn't kind of the right thing to do.
No.
Respect about it, 100%. When he said that, I go, man, I have a new profound respect or liking for Dom, because the balls that on him to say that to DC, to say that about DC at the press conference, and then to have the sit down interview with DC and to bring it up again. And the way that he went about it also said, like, what do you not like about me? Like let's just get this all off,
yeah,
off
but
the table, man.
It's very confrontational. There's no need for that, because what we want is good chemistry amongst us all, as you said.
100%.
So I won't stick on it too much. But what one thing that Dominic was talking about, and I can testify to this, he was saying, well, you don't do your own research. Okay. And then obviously, and you know, when you're doing the LFA, I'm assuming you do a lot of research because it's absolutely crucial to the role. And I talk about it all the time. And, you know, when I'm commentating on a Saturday night, the entire week, obviously I do this podcast and I do a few other things. I work out once a day, sometimes twice a day, whatever. But other than that, I'm studying fights. I'm watching tape. Mm-hmm. I'm Googling their names. I'm reading interviews, looking at their social media, looking for things to talk about and storylines. And DC did used to have somebody that compiled that information for him. So
right.
Cruz was talking a bit of shit, but DC would still absorb the information. He was still, it's just that he would get someone to compile it all for him, get the links and all, because that's obvious, as you probably know, that's a lot of the time just
time
searching
consuming.
Online. It's so time consuming, finding those links, finding the interviews. So DC still reads it. You just have someone compile it and into a format that he can just digest
he had
it quickly.
An assistant do the groundwork, and then he would get the good stuff, and then he could interpret it the way
yes.
that he needed to interpret it as the professional on both ends of the camera. And
then,
that's what we get out of DC.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But then he even said to me, because we worked together last Saturday, you were there as well, I believe, right?
No, but I watched it. No, I wasn't there.
And I said to him, I said, you know, I talked to him and I said, because obviously it is a process, all the research, as I said, and I'm always curious as to how other people do it. You know, I'm always asking John, you know,
too,
trying
man.
To learn myself, you know what I mean? If there's any tips I can pick up along the way. I said, do you still use a guy? He said, no, I don't anymore. And
okay.
I said, why is that? He said, well, number one, it costs money. It's a little expensive. And secondly, he said, I want to absorb it more myself. Do you know what I mean? I want to make sure I can do the best job I can. So that's why I felt the need to have his back there and jump in and say, hold on, Dom. You know what I mean? Come on. That's not really fair. But
I remember what you're talking about. I remember DC showing me one time some notes that were given to him. And he just had to, again, interpret it in his own way and deliver it from his experience, which he's very capable of doing. I'll say this, though, man. I find that DC has gotten himself, maybe not his fault, but in trouble before in the past of, do you remember when DC first fought in the UFC or early in his career and he fought Patrick Cummins?
I do. I remember it well. Patrick took it on short notice. He was working at Starbucks, whatever.
And it was a beef between them because Patrick Cummins brought up some stuff that wasn't supposed to be brought up outside of the wrestling room because he said DC cried after practice or something one time. DC handled it very well, but that was DC's argument. Like, man, you don't bring these things up. This is something that was in the wrestling mat that stays on the wrestling mat. Same thing he's having with Dominic Cruz. These are things that stay within the commentary booth, the confines of the green room that we talk about. They shouldn't be brought up to the media public. So I wonder if DC will now start to maybe bite his tongue when he's kind of feeling so loose and relaxed amongst everybody, you know? I mean, this is two times that it's kind of bit him.
Yeah,
bit him in the butt.
Well, it was unfortunate, I think, the whole thing, because, of course, we want to be a united front. We do not definitely want to be bickering amongst one another. So, but still, DC was the bigger man, if you ask me. DC handled it with grace. I thought he took it very well because he could have lost his shit a bit. But by the end of it, they all shook hands. They had a little hug. They laughed it off. And hopefully, just one of those things, hopefully Cruz keeps his fucking mouth shut going forward. Let's be honest. Love you, Dom. Good luck this weekend, buddy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's just hear from our sponsor, Blue Chew. Listen, if you like sex, you're going to like BlueChew.com because they offer a performance enhancement for the bedroom. Listen, come on. Everybody needs a little bit of assistance. Wouldn't you like to go a few extra rounds? Listen, at BlueChew.com, you get the first chewables with the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. And chewables can work faster than pills. In fact, up to twice as fast. And you can take them on a full or an empty stomach. Online physician consult is free, so it's cheaper than those other two. It only takes a few minutes to connect with a BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And there's no in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at a pharmacy. It ships directly to your door in a discreet packaging, so nobody has to know what's in your packages, and nobody needs to know that your sexual performance is going to be enhanced through the ceiling. The tubules from BlueChew.com are prescribed online by a doctor and made in the USA, and it will give you confidence in the bedroom every single time. You and your partner are going to love it. All you got to do is chew it and then literally do it. Got a great deal for you. Of course, visit BlueChew.com. Get your first order for free when you use the promo code BELIEVE. All you got to do is pay $5 shipping. That is Blue, B-L-U-E, BlueChew.com. Promo code BELIEVE. First month for free. Just pay $5 shipping. Chew it and do it. Knock yourself out. Have a great time. And that's on me. All right. Where were we? Talking of this weekend, we should get into some of these fights. We should do it. Top of the bill, baby. Let's go right to the top. We're not working out. Oh, but hold on. But then we work our way down, and then it seems like an anticlimax. What do you think? This is not the person we should ask. But Harrington O'Brien, top or bottom or middle? Where do we start?
The middle sounds kind of fun, actually. Start from the main card, first fight, and then work your way up there. And then if there's anything on the prelims that jump out to you guys, let me know.
Well, I mean, I just thought
Harrington was going to say he's a bottom.
I tell you, Brian, you do come in with some classic one-liners here and there. You know. All right. Well, let's ignore Harrington. We'll start with Dustin Poirier. We'll start with Dustin Poirier. Let me show on our mind. I spoke to him yesterday. He seemed so happy, so content. He said the weight cut's the best ever. He's 10 pounds over. As we know, only 10 pounds over, which for him is good. As we know, coming off two great victories over Conor McGregor. Call it what you will on the second one. I still class it as a great victory. I thought he looked sensational. Yeah, it was a shame he injured his leg, but still, it was a victory. Mm-hmm. Just like Cheeto Vera, Sean O'Malley, just like if you start a fight healthy and then you injure or break something in that fight, doesn't mean you didn't lose that fight. Still, we're here to talk about Dustin. What do you think, Alan?
I mean, there's the easy answer, which is, you know, early for Charles favors him, later in the rounds favors Poirier. But I've got to give, I believe, I'm trying to look at my notes right here. Poirier's, you know, a minus 160 or whenever I got this, he was. So Poirier's the favorite, right, going into this fight. And I feel like that's accurate. You know why? Because Mike, like, you look at Charles Oliveira, and he's very dangerous on the feet, as he's known for his submissions, but look at the boxing that he's been doing lately. He gets in your face with pure confidence, and he's moving side to side, and he's throwing his Muay Thai, and he's landing everything with the knees, punches, elbows, everything. But Poirier has the opportunity to end the fight early as well, and he has the opportunity to drag this into deep waters, which always favors him. He's just that dog in a fight, where I don't feel like the obvious answer, again, Charles getting drugged into a dogfight later in the later rounds, that doesn't favor him. He's more of an early starter, try to get him out of there. But as much as we say, watch out for Oliveira early, I feel like you have to watch out for Poirier early as well. He's that dangerous as well. He's got a ton of finishes, and his boxing is just so – you've seen the Conor fights, right? The last two fights we just spoke of. Did either of those fights – they both ended second round, if I'm not wrong, correct?
No. The last one ended at the end of the first, and the second
end of the first –
and the second one ended in the second, start of the second.
Second round. Right? Okay, but nonetheless, it didn't even make it to the 15 minutes, much left a 25-minute fight. So just kind of showing Poirier, both men coming off of a bunch of momentum, but Poirier as well coming off of momentum of early finish knockouts. And you know what that does? When you start getting those early knockout finishes, you come into fights thinking like, let me find these moments again. Let me continue this momentum.
You think you're going to go in there and knock everyone out like that. But let me ask you this. I got a question for everybody. Give us a four shot, Brian. Let's go absolutely insane on this. This may work. This may not. I may regret doing this. Brian, are you alive? He's not alive. Harrington, are you alive? Are we just flying solo here?
What are we bringing something up?
We're just going to bring the four of us on because I was going to ask you a question because it's a great point that you bring up because I got the stats from the UFC here that they emailed through. Who do you think has the longer or the shorter fight time?
An average fight time between these two men?
No. Who has the shorter fight time? The shorter average fight time between the two of them? Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira.
The shorter fight time between the two of them. Being that Oliveira is such a finisher. I'm going to have to go with Oliveira, but Poirier is a freaking finisher too. I don't have his stats in front of me. Give me a good. I don't know.
Fight time for Charles Oliveira, and this is very impressive, 6 minutes 53. Average fight time for Dustin Poirier, 10 minutes and 9 seconds.
Wow.
And that is quite the difference. But, all right.
So average, Poirier makes it into the third round more frequently.
He does. Strikes landed per minute. Charles Oliveira, 3.26. Poirier, 5.79. So he's busier.
3.26 against 5.79 strikes.
Yes.
Significant strikes per minute.
Correct. And then strike defense. Oh, no, let's do this. This is a good one. Strikes absorbed. Charles only absorbs 3 strikes a minute. Poirier absorbs 4.3 strikes a minute. So a lot of the numbers are in Charles's favor. But I think when you look at the records, and no disrespect to Michael Chandler, of course, that's one of his biggest wins. By far his biggest win, he became the champ. I think the difference is, which maybe skews these stats a little bit, is the level of competition. Because if you look at Khabib's last few opponents, he's got Conor on there twice, Dan Hooker, Khabib, Justin Gage,
Poirier's opponents.
Yeah. Is that what I said? Yeah, but that's
you take a B,
said.
But yeah.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Yeah. Poirier's opponents have been nothing but top of the food chain for a long time. Of course,
agree.
Oliveira's been fighting Chandler and Tony Ferguson, but prior to that, you know, maybe just not as good competition. So I think the stats kind of they don't lie, but they can be misleading.
And you look at also, Mike, to follow up on what you're saying. And again, I don't want people to think that I'm trying to toot Poirier's horn here. Obviously, I have a relationship with Poirier, but I'm more familiar with his work, right? And you talk about level of competition. You also talk about level of competition of losses, because they both have like what 7 or 8 losses on their record or around there, right? I think Charles Oliveira has 8 losses. But those losses were not nearly the level of competition that Poirier took his losses to. You look at Felder, Ricardo Lamas, Pettis, Max. And you know what's wild about this, man? I didn't know this until I looked this up before this show. Charles Oliveira has the record for the most submissions in the UFC. But he's also been submitted himself back-to-back by Ricardo Lamas and Anthony Pettis. 2 fights in a row, Charles Oliveira, the king of submissions, was himself submitted.
But that's why people sometimes, well, there's this narrative that goes around, and maybe it was true in the past, but I don't think it is now, and it's certainly not fair now, is that he's a quitter, you know, because he has been submitted and he has been stopped, excuse me, in a lot of fights, you know. But I think now, when he came to the UFC, he was only like 21. I think he's still kind of young now. I think he's only like 31, maybe 30, 31. Oh, yeah. So he's still a very young man, but he's grown into himself, and he was fighting at 45. When you're trying to squeeze into those lower weight classes, you can't take a shot as well. You definitely lose power. Now he's at 55. The power looks really good. The submissions, of course. I mean, come on. What a crazy stat. Out of every single person on planet Earth that stepped foot inside the octagon, all the great jiu-jitsu players, he has more submissions than anybody else. I mean, that is fucking wild.
I think that's what Dustin Poirier fears the most is getting hit with something and not being knocked out, but being stunned just long enough for Oliveira to slap on a submission. I think that's what he's going to be fearing. I think Poirier is not going to change his style drastically, I wouldn't imagine. But he's got such a compact style. When I say compact, and you know what I'm talking about, but for our viewers, he's such a boxing anti-wrestling style or offensive wrestler. His hands are always up. He's always throwing punches and bunches, combinations. He's always pressure fighter. You see this in his fights and me getting to train with him at home. I'm very much, when I spar with people, I like to take the wind out of their sails. I like to pressure them. And when I go against Poirier, it's pressure against pressure. It's nonstop combination punches, finishing to the body, coming upstairs. And as soon as you take a breath to exhale, he's double jabbing you, resetting the angle.
Yeah.
He's very much that type of fighter, where Oliveira is very much a wider, he'll have his hands up. But, you know, he's looking for dynamic striking. He's looking to kick you, knee you, elbow you. And so there will be more openings, even though he's from a further range. But as you know, I sound like I'm contradicting myself, but Poirier takes more punches because he's a boxer. He boxes. And when you know it, to give a punch, a lot of times you take a punch. You look at the Diaz brothers when they were being considered some of the best boxers in MMA at one point, and they were getting busted up every fight because they were still taking an enormous amount of damage. And Dustin takes a lot of damage as well.
Yeah, I think when you look at the last few fights of Dan – Sorry, Dustin Poirier. He's definitely got better. Look at those fights against Conor McGregor. Conor, you know, love him, hate him, feel like he's on the slide or whatever. He's an incredible striker, incredible boxer. And he beat him at his own game on two occasions. Of course, against Dan Hooker, he looks sensational as well. I think when you combine it with that, I think you combine it with the high-level experience. I think with the footwork that he has and the speed and just the grit and determination and the chin and what this means to him. Of course, it's a big deal to Charles Oliveira as well. Not taking that away from him, of course. Everything I just said about him applies to Charles in terms of motivation. He comes from the favelas. He comes from a very disadvantaged background. Of course, he's going to leave no fucking stone unturned. He's going to do whatever he can to remain the champ. But I just feel that that fire burns a little stronger for Dustin Poirier in terms of his legacy, his destiny, the journey that he's been on. And for those reasons, my official pick, Dustin Poirier, knockout. TKO.
Knockout. Okay, TKO. Finishes the fight.
I think he finishes the fight, round three or round four, as you say, with the hands.
Later round. I mean, I'd have to second that. As I said in the beginning, just because he has the opportunity to finish a fight early or late, where I see Oliveira more of an early starter. But let me just say something about Oliveira, because I felt like I gave Dustin a lot of love. And one thing, you mentioned how Poirier has gotten so much better in his career, and nothing can be said more so than the same for Charles Oliveira. You look at his early career, his fighting style, and you look at him now, and it's almost two different people. He still slaps on submissions, but I feel like his striking has gotten so much more. And the thing that you alluded to, not having to drain his body down for those lower weight classes anymore. You look at his chin. When he got dropped by Michael Chandler and the heart that he showed in that fight and the wherewithal, he was hurt on the ground, and he was doing that thing where he's on all falls, but he's just, all fours, and he's just – just staying alive, right? Until the fall goes away. Get back up, find himself, get the finish, got the knockout. So he's a whole nother animal as well. And I think his power has gone up in his strikes, and his chin has gotten a lot better as well.
Well, as you say there, on that point, if people think that he quits right there and then in that first round, the end of the first round against Chandler,
easy opportunity.
That was an easy opportunity to fall to his back and just say, I'm done. Better man got me today. Sorry, guys. But no, he showed a lot of balls there. He showed a lot of smart and fight IQ and made it to the second round and got the win. Brian, are you there, my friend? Are you there? Or has he gone to the bathroom? Oh, there he is.
How are you?
Harrington was itching to get on for quite some time. And we actually, did you go for a pee-pee?
Pee-pee.
You disappeared for a moment. We were talking to you. You weren't here.
Oh, me?
It's quite all right. You're allowed to go for a pee-pee.
Oh, maybe I did. I don't remember.
couple minutes ago.
Show yourself. Who do you guys have in the main event? Brian, we'll start with you.
I got Dustin.
Dustin. Yeah. TKO finish. So what?
I think he's gonna put him down, make the ref stop it. Yeah.
Harrington. Is he still alive?
I'm still alive. I'm gonna be the one dissenting opinion here. I think for whatever reason, Charlie Olives gets this done. I could see a situation
because it's the Olive era.
It could be.
We couldn't be a clean sweep for Poirier anyway. We needed
exactly.
I could see a situation where Dustin Poirier knocks him down, falls him to the ground, and Charles Oliveira just throws something off his back and catches him in a submission. I mean, you know, like you said, this is a guy who you've seen that change in his game plan. I mean, the Pettis fight you brought up, right, where he got caught in that submission, he was beating the shit out of Anthony Pettis, and he just got caught in a desperation guillotine. I mean, this is a guy who has had that, like, bend this close so many times and had it taken away from him. Now that he's got that title, I don't think he's letting it go for love or money. That idea of Poirier getting on top of him and Oliveira just welcoming into the ground game, that seems exciting to me. I want to see this fight go to the ground at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an MMA fight. And you never know. Listen, I'm counting out Charlie. I'm not counting him out. I'm just saying I believe in Dustin a little bit more just because he's a little more battle-tested against higher level of competition. All right, let's just take a quick second to hear about Hemp Fusion. Listen, everywhere you look these days, you're going to see a CBD company, okay? But you don't know what's good, you don't know what's bad, and there is a lot of bad out there, but there's a lot of fantastic ones. And I'm telling you right now, from personal experience, and I've been a proud ambassador of this company for a long time now, Hemp Fusion is the way you want to go if you're looking for CBD, okay? It is truly organic. It is extracted the long way around, which gives you the best quality CBD. And they have every type of CBD that you want. They have CBD for energy, the energy support. They have the sleep support, which is absolutely fantastic. That blends CBD with terpenes, omega, GABA, black pepper, olive oil together. They knock you out in a nice way, but they wake you up with a smile on your face, a pep in your step, and ready to rock and roll. Also, if you go to the website, they've got gummies, they've got tinctures, every type of way that you think you want CBD, they have it. They got some great creams on there as well. They got the hemp fusion, the muscle ache cream. If you got any pains and bruises and stuff like that, they've got a lot. They really do have a lot. So go to the website, check it all out. But they've got the sleep support, the energy support, and the stress support, which has been a good one for me. But as I say, the price, you want a good price. If you go to hempfusion.com right now, you use the code COUNT at checkout, you're going to get 25% off and free shipping. So you're going to get the best CBD. You're going to get high quality. It's going to be truly organic. It's going to knock you out. It's going to give you energy. It's going to reduce your stress, reduce your anxiety. It's going to do whatever you're looking for, but you're also going to save some money. Hempfusion.com is the website. The code is COUNT, but only use that if you want 25% off and free shipping. All right, enjoy. Where were we? Harrington, there's a little bit of drama unfolding in the co-main event, or should I say the co-featured bout between Juliana Pena and the lioness Amanda Nunes. Give us the lowdown, Harrington.
Well, if you remember, these two were supposed to fight it. I believe it was UFC 265 a few months back. Nunes had to pull out because of, you know, medical issues. I believe it was COVID, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, regardless, Juliana Pena showed up to that press conference and got in Dana's face asking, where's Amanda? Where's Amanda Nunes? I'm ready to fight her right now. I'm here. Where's Amanda Nunes? You know, which in Juliana Pena's mind makes her the uncrowned champion, I guess. Either way, you know, the two are going to do battle on Saturday night, and Nunes is calling this an absolute clown show and is not giving this any kind of credence.
Alan?
Well, I think to show up because Amanda couldn't fight and be the uncrowned champ, I mean, I think, man, so,
that's some sugar Sean O'Malley talk right there.
Yeah, right. I know. It's. I mean, look, if she's playing the headlines and she's getting people talking about her, that's one way to play the card. But to actually feel that way, no, you're looking at the GOAT, the GWOAT, whatever you call it, the greatest woman of all time. I do worry. I do worry that Amanda isn't in her heart feeling like this is the most dangerous fight that she's ever had. And there's reason to be. I mean, she's fought the best in the world with the Valentinas and Cyborgs. And those are scary fights, Mike. You know how it is. When you fight somebody that you know can knock you out or is like really trying to hurt you, they're not just some martial artist. You go through those scary fights. Those are the ones that when you're on deck before the curtain opens up, you're nervous and you're going through the pattern and the routine and you're trying to convince yourself, I'm not going to be the person that dies today. Like it's going to be them.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't feel like she's scared in this fight because Juliana Pena, she's more of a, I'm going to take you down. I'm going to maul you. You know, I'm going to try to ground and pound you, but it's not as scary as being knocked unconscious by Cyborg.
I asked her that yesterday, though, that exact thing. I said, if I'm in Juliana Pena's camp, I'm probably saying she's probably overlooking you. She probably doesn't feel that you're dangerous. And if she's doing that and if she gets complacent, then, of course, that's good for us. And I even said, do you still get scared before the fights? Everything you just mentioned, I asked her about that yesterday. And she said, and I even said, do you feel, this is what I think, I said, Juliana Pena's going to come forward, try and come forward, corral you against the fence, clinch, take you down, and control you like that. Obviously, that's what she does, and that is how probably your best chance of winning this fight. And she said, number one, yeah, of course, everybody tries to do that to me, so I'm prepared for that. Secondly, I'm not underestimating anybody. Thirdly, I forget what the third point was, but the fourth point that I'm just going to throw in there is that I said, assuming you're victorious against Pena, I know you fought Shevchenko twice. You know, does a third fight interest you? And would you be willing to go to 130 pounds? She comes up for 125 to 130, and you do a female BMF. Because I feel that the balance of favor is already tipped in Amanda's favor there. You know what I'm saying? Because it's at 135. Valentina's coming up to 135 from 25. It's a big jump. She said, yeah, I'll do that. And the point I'm bringing that up for is, just got to respect Amanda's attitude. She's like, yeah, whatever. I'll fight anyone. I'm here to fight everybody. And if I'm going to go down, she doesn't have to go down to 130, but she said, I would be open to that.
She would be open to a catch.
She would be open to that. Yeah. And I was like, wow.
So they're the two greatest women in MMA right now in the UFC. But I feel like if Amanda gets his victory, we're not going to be talking about Valentina, Mike. We're going to be talking about,
Kayla Harrison.
Thank you very much. She's in talks. They said that she's in talks with Dana White right now. I mean, I don't know any specifics on it, but I saw that in the headlines that she's speaking
Harrington?
To the UFC. Yes.
Harrington, what do you have on that, Harrington? I believe I saw something in the notes.
Yeah, so Dana says that he is in talks with her. They have been going back and forth. And Dana says that he is open to keeping around the women's featherweight division as long as Amanda Nunes is still interested in defending that title. The moment she says, I've had enough of this, they're probably going to scrap it. But for right now, if Harrison wants that fight with Nunes, you know, that is something that Dana White is open to.
Well, I guess as well. Go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say, Harrison is a woman that can carry that division. She does it all, man. I'm impressed with her. She talks the talk. She knows how to get out there and promote herself. She backs it up, fighting and talking. And so I think that would be the smartest decision for Dana. I don't know what type of money she's asking for. As long as it's in the ballpark of being realistic, snatch her up. She's such an addition to the UFC to have a woman that's dominant like that, that can talk and then promotes another super fight if Amanda gets through this fight.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about for Amanda as well. You know, staying at 145, if she has the competition. You know what I mean? Because you can't just be one person in a division by yourself. You're bringing Kayla Harrison for a fight here and there. And then, you know, because Felicia Spencer is no longer with the organization. Megan Anderson's no longer with the organization there. Amanda's last two fights.
Megan Anderson either?
Yeah, no, she's gone. I think her contract ran out or whatever and they never re-upped it. I think so. I'm not sure. So, yeah. But anyway,
that's the division.
Yeah, well, it can't. Exactly. That's my point. But anyway, come on. Amanda Nunes, all day long. I can't see Juliana beating her. I know Juliana's a tough girl. I know she's got that attitude. I know she's not afraid of kneeing someone in the balls outside of a bar in Oregon or wherever the fuck it was. The reason I bring that up is like she's a real one. She's a real fighter. She ain't a pretender. And she trains with Michael Chiesa and whoever else is up there. So she's got some great training partners. She's a big, strong girl. And she's coming. She's got a big opportunity. So I think she'll give her a good round. I think the first round might be challenging for Amanda because she has been controlled before. But then I think Amanda takes over. Round three, we get another stoppage.
Yeah, and that seems like ages ago, Mike, when you think about it was Kat Zingano, right? It's Kat Zingano that beat Amanda Nunes in her last. And I tell you what, that was impressive. I was at that fight. I think she was, I don't know what you call it. It was like a suplex type, but she was throwing her, getting on top of her and just dominating her on the ground. And so Juliana Pena obviously is a smart girl and she's watching all the modern fights, but she's basing her game plan on that, on being able to do that to Amanda. And I feel like she's going to be a little bit shocked when she feels how strong Amanda is now, how much she's improved in her striking and in her grappling rather. And then when she's not able to get that and she has to face those long arms and those powerful looping shots, you're going to see the facial expression change on her face.
As I say, I was with Nunes yesterday. And, of course, she had like a baggy top on. But she looked big. She looked big. She looked strong. She was so happy as well. She was there with the family, with her wife. Yeah. Is Nina her wife? I believe. Are they married?
Because she changed her name. It's Nina Nunes now.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so she was there with the wife and the baby, Reagan. And she was just so happy and like – I've never seen her so energetic and so happy and just loving life, you know. And you know yourself when you go into a fight like that and the energy is all correct. And of course, you've done the work as well. You're a very difficult person to beat. So there we go, Nunes. Just quick on this one, Kaya Cara France, Cody Garbrandt. I've seen Kaya Cara France fight a couple of times, but I can't pretend I can sit here and break him down like crazy. I know he's fast. I know he's got good hands, but I think this will be a good one for Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah, you know what? I have to agree.
I can't stand here and talk about Kaya Cara France with massive authority. I can't. I've never commentated one of his fights. I've seen a couple of his fights as a fan a while ago. I'm yet to go and do the whole thing, studying him and whatnot. So I haven't done that, but I've done Cody fucking Garbrandt. He's really, I can talk Cody all day. Let's talk about Cody.
I wish I had somebody to give me some notes on Kaya Cara France real quick. Hold on. Cheat sheet.
What do I have here?
You didn't have an assistant help you out real quick? Are you getting some knowledge right now?
Oh, we got Taito Avassa on here as well. I can't wait for that guy.
This is also, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, is this the debut, flyweight debut for Cody?
Yes.
And I wonder if he's fought flyweight before the UFC. Since he's been in the UFC, I'm pretty sure he's been strictly at bantamweight, correct? And this is his UFC debut. We don't know what he's done at flyweight. So I'm hoping what I'm getting at, I'm hoping this, that he did a test cut or it feels good. I haven't seen him so far.
He said to me yesterday, he feels amazing. And the cut to 125 could not be going any better.
Okay. So as long as he has a smart cut and that doesn't take anything away from him, the cut has no factor in this fight. you got to go with Cody. You got to go with the speed and the power that he brings to every fight.
Again, I always bring this up, and I think it was Cody's crowning moment, his finest hour, when he won the belt, the bantamweight title from Dominic Cruz. I think it was December 2016, end of year show again. That performance he put on against Cruz, and of course, that was 5 years ago now, which is crazy. And yes, I know he suffered some knockout defeats to Pedro Munhoz, who's on the card, and of course, to TJ Dillashaw twice in a row. And he just lost to Rob Font in, you know, devastating style, shall we say. But still, he showed in that fight with Dominic Cruz what he's capable of. The hands that he has, the power that he has, the footwork that he has, just the reflexes and the mentality that he possesses. I think when he's on the money and he's in the right weight class, because against Rob Font beat him that night, not taking anything away from him, but Rob Font was so much bigger. So I think 125 will suit him better because he's not a big guy.
Bigger, and you saw Cody having trouble with that long reach, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, you saw recently, I think you called that card, Font and Aldo. I mean, Font, when he gets that jab going and he gets his boxing going, he's going to compete with anybody, obviously, in the division. I mean, he's tough to deal with. You have to be able to get inside and let those power punches like Aldo land, which Cody was trying to do in that fight. He just wasn't able to do it. But so to your point, flyweight division, he might be able to get inside on some of these longer guys better.
What I'm going to do is we're going to just switch things up a little bit more at the moment. So it's not all analytic on the show. And we're going to do a little bit more talking. But one storyline that's doing the rounds, and it involves Dominic Cruz again, and Sugar Sean O'Malley to a certain degree. There's been a lot of talk about Cruz being on the prelims and O'Malley being on the main card. You know, and I know a lot of people have been asking Cruz about that, how he feels. And of course, he's had to probably eat a little bit of humble pie because he was the bantamweight champ. He's one of the best. He's definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. And he helped put the bantamweight division on the map. But that is things that he'd done in the past, unfortunately. And in this sport, it's what have you done for me lately? And while Sugar Sean O'Malley is not ranked and he has not had anywhere near the career that Dominic Cruz had yet, right now, he is a big star. The children resonate with him. You know, he's very, very 2021. You know what I mean? No, but the young TikTokers, the younger generation.
It's a young crowd. I agree.
It's true. And yesterday, because he's got this big hair, you know, one could say it looks like a clown. He pulls it off. He looks cool as fuck. I said to him, how long does it take? How long do you think that hair takes to do?
Oh, his? Well, I saw he was doing it on like Ariel's show, but man, I think his wife does
Harrington
hair,
and, yeah, that's right. Harrington and Brian, come on, give me your best shot. How long to have that hairstyle implemented?
3 hours.
Three hours?
I'm going to double that and
Alan,
say
go back
six.
To 3 hours at the back there. Anyone else, any takers?
Six.
You're going six.
If it takes 6 hours, we got a new bidder at the back there.
Harrington's probably about right. It probably takes him about 6 hours to get all that shit cornrowed up and dyed.
It's not for the cornrows. It's for the big, like.
We're talking just dye. Yeah.
The big Sideshow Bob multicolor.
That probably takes forever, dude.
5 hours.
Five, six hours. Yeah.
Five. Harrington was not correct. He went overboard. It's just like, what's that game? Wheel of Fortune or something? You go 1 cent over, boom, you're done.
Yeah.
Price is right.
Price is right.
There you go. Harrington, you were out by an hour. 60 minutes. Man, you weren't even close, bro.
I mean, you know, you got pretty good hair, Mike. I'm trying to hold on to my hair. Thank God I don't have to do 5 hours of sitting in a chair getting it dyed and then another couple of hours of corn rolls just for the fight every time. That's a ton of work, man. I'm sure he's smoking and playing games, though.
Oh, yeah. He's having a great time. He's doing a podcast. Yeah. He's streaming live on Twitch. You know, he's smoking a J. He's having a good old time. 5 hours, though. That's a long time. I mean, he looks cool, though. He does.
It's a lot. But it's part of his thing. Like, now you expect that, right? You expect when you see Sugar Sean that he's going to say something that's a little outlandish, a little crazy. He's going to show up with the hair. He might have a new facial tattoo.
Would you ever do a facial tattoo, Alan? I'm assuming
never,
no. I mean, come on, look
never.
At the face on this guy. You're too handsome for this.
it is the new generation thing, man. Like, you just kind of do something that's a little out the box, crazy, but it people dig it, man. And he, like you mentioned, he is a star in the UFC, and that's why I feel like every single one of O'Malley's fights might have been on pay per view. I mean, he's the pay per view guy. They put him on the pay per view. He's in that second or third slot all the time. The kind of people watch out for him. He's got that fan base.
You're absolutely right. He's always on pay-per-view. He said this week, because he was wearing a piece of merch, he was talking to Brett Okamoto, and it said, uncrowned champ or something. Uncrowned and
unranked
undefeated.
Or unranked champ,
unranked and undefeated, yeah. Or something like that, and then uncrowned. Whatever,
come on.
And Okamoto said, "What is this all about?" He said, "Well, I am the uncrowned champ." And Brett Okamoto was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I am the biggest name in this division. Okay, there is a champion out there," he said, "but yeah. I have more eyeballs than me. So to me, that is what makes you the champ. I am the people's champ of the division. Therefore, I am the young crown champ." And, you know, the way that he said it, it actually was kind of reasonable. You know what I mean? I understood his point because he is a big star. And there's nothing wrong with realizing that. There's nothing wrong with realizing your worth to the company, you know, and he knows he has a lot of eyeballs on him and he does have a great style. I mean, come on, let's be honest. Chris Martino, of course, no one had heard of the guy, wasn't in the UFC, but it was a hell of a show that he put on. And every time he does, every time he goes out there, he does get better and better. He is great to watch. He is a lot of fun and he does have that it factor. He was talking about maybe one day fighting Piotr Jan and that would be a gigantic fight for the promotion. Could you imagine? I mean, if he's got so much hype now, imagine if he did work his way up the rankings and actually have a title fight on pay-per-view. I mean, he could be Conor McGregor's stuff.
And just, I mean, I don't want to get overly analytical again, but a beautiful conflict of styles. I mean, you talk about Peter Yan and we talk about his boxing and explosiveness. Then you have the long sniper who's so fluid in his movement. And O'Malley, I mean, that'd be a wild fight. I just, you know, as everybody, I want to see him tested with the tougher with the top team, some of these tough guys that might have the hand speed as him, the reach, or also the wrestling capabilities. Because so far he's been somewhat handed favorable fights, but he's passed everyone with flying colors. As you said, that last one, the guy that was new to the UFC, that might have been an easier fight for him. But the numbers that he put up and the little damage that he took in that fight, not anybody could do that. You fight somebody who's not on your level or not. He comes through. He's got that X factor when the lights are shining bright.
And it is risky for him. And he even mentioned this himself as well in that interview, because, you know, if you go up there and you fight somebody that's ranked, somebody that has a name, okay, and you lose to that person, it's less of a fall from grace. You know what I mean? Yeah. You say, well, okay, well, you fought someone really good. You fought a Dominic Cruz. You fought a Pedro Munoz, who were both fighting on the card, by the way. You know, fighting against someone that's unranked and then you lose when you're someone that is the star of the magnitude of a Sean O'Malley and then you lose to someone like that. It's like, oh, shit, that's a massive fall from grace. So he does realize that and he's taking that chance. But it ain't easy. I mean, Hoolan Paiva, I think he's on a 3-fight win streak. He's training at Team Alpha Male. He's a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. If I was training him, the game plan would be simple. Again, back him up against the fence, shoot in, try and take him down. O'Malley said, look, listen, he said, what, you're going to teach someone to wrestle in 2 months? Believe it or not, you can teach someone how to take someone down in 2 months. You can if you drill, drill, drill. And that's all they do at Team Alpha Male. So I think the takedown defense of Sean O'Malley will be put to the test on this one. However, I do believe the footwork will be too much. I believe he'll be very elusive. He'll stay out of the way. And Paiva, I don't think he'll get a finish, but I've got it 30-27, Sugar Sean O'Malley.
Oh, I thought you were going the other way for a second.
No.
I was shocked here.
Come on.
When you said Paiva, I don't think he'll get the finish. I thought you meant you were giving 30-27 to Paiva. I'm going to have to go the way with the new generation right here, man. O'Malley, he moves. Look, the way that he says these things that I don't think are really true, or like, let's test him first, or he hasn't beaten any top-ranked guys, all these things, whatever you say. When you watch him fight, it's so impressive, and you have to gain respect for him. His fluid movement is so good. His counter punches, his strikes, he manages distance so well. And as you spoke about the footwork, he doesn't allow himself to get cornered or to get into like the pocket very often. He stays at sniper range and picks his points that he wants to hit you with. He's kind of got that Conor McGregor-ish kind of flair in his striking. And I see him using that flair to get through the win.
Yeah, no, totally agree. All right, completely not even on the main card. Harrington, let me ask you a question. And Brian, I'll ask you the same question as well. How much money would we have to pay you if we were to take one of your shoes, collectively, all spit in it, okay, and then put a little bit of alcohol in there and you had to down it? How much would that cost to get us to do that?
I haven't had a drink since 2007, so I'm going to need at least $1 million to throw my life away.
Oh, come on. No. But just for the sake of...
It could be Gatorade.
Yeah, Gatorade. Yeah, how much? There we go. Good one, Alan. Good one.
Yeah. I'm going to need to see an STD test before this happens. And if that all comes back clean, I'll do it for $1,000.
No. All right. But Harrington, how much? No, seriously.
I was going to say 10K, but now I feel like I'm gouging with
what do you
Brian.
Mean 10K? To drink some Gatorade out of a shoe? What are you talking about? Come on.
Athlete's foot of the throat? That's horrible.
It does not exist. There is not an athlete's throat. If granted, if anyone could have it, that would be you.
It's got herpes.
Yeah. Herpes in the throat. Come on, Harrison, give us a note. If I was here with cold hard cash right now, Alan, what about you?
Man, I don't know, man. I don't want somebody spitting in it. I guess the alcohol helps. But you know what, Mike, what always comes to my mind is when they do this with the random people in the crowd that probably just flew in and they didn't wear any shoes at the airport and they went through security and they walked on that floor with 1,000 feet. They put their shoe back on and he does a shoey. Use your own shoe. Don't use some random person's fungus foot shoe.
It's when they all spit in it. Different.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is fucking gross. And I know it's nothing new, the shoe is. We've spoke about it on here, and everyone's familiar that Tyre to a Vasa. That's his thing. Go on, Harrington. I see you raising your finger.
Well, I think the worst was at the last one when some guy dumped like half a bottle of Dustin Poirier's hot sauce into one.
Oh,
and you see him like starting to chug it. And he's like, what the hell is this? And he starts puking it up.
I never saw that.
And I messed him up.
Oh, my God. Anyway, he's back in action against the Gustavo Sakai. I love Tai Tuivasa. I saw him yesterday. Someone said to him yesterday, they said, how many shoeys do you ever think do you think that you've had in your life? And what did he say? If you go to Fight Club, bring it up, Brian. It's on Fight Club, Tai Tuivasa. If you don't mind just bringing it up on the at Fight Club page on Instagram.
How many times has a priest been to church?
Oh, that was it. Yeah. How many times has a priest been to church?
Yeah, it was a good comeback, right?
God, it was a really good timing funny comeback. On that. Yeah, no, it was. All right, let's just take a quick second to hear from Sheath Underwear. This Christmas, are you looking to treat yourself or your loved ones to the greatest underwear ever made? Well, you should be. And SheathUnderwear.com is making it easy for you to stock up with their biggest savings of the entire year. What is Sheath Underwear? Well, it's the underwear made of high-quality cooling materials and a dual pouch system so that you can keep your man parts cool, separated, and in place. This underwear prevents chafing, balls getting stuck to your legs. We hate that one. Sweaty butt cracks, never good on a hot day. Loose parts flopping about all over the place, and much, much more. Everything at sheathunderwear.com, and I'm telling you, is super high quality, and the website is fully stocked. No supply line issues here. If you're looking for gifts for the Christmas season, Sheath is in stock and ready for you to stuff its sheath hole. Sounds a little weird. Listen, these are fantastic. I have many pairs of Sheath underwear. They've been very kind to supply me with some. I can attest to the quality. It is second to none. Every pair that I've had for a couple of years now, they still look fantastic. The colors haven't faded. The waistband, you know, it hasn't got loose or slack or anything like that. They are fantastic. The designs are very cool. And of course, they're very comfortable. And as I just said, you know, prevents chafing, prevents your balls getting stuck to your legs and sweaty butt cracks. Listen, this Christmas, treat your loved one to some beautiful underwear. Go to sheathunderwear.com and load up on the world's most comfortable underwear. And if you use the promo code BELIEVE20, then you're going to get 20% off. Sheathunderwear.com, BELIEVE20 for 20% off. All right, where were we? Harrington, what are we missing? What storylines are we missing from this big fight week? Is there anything we need to discuss?
Hey, I don't want to steal your stuff, Harrington, but why are you talking about beer and stuff? Can we talk about Neil versus Ponzinibbio, the DUI?
Oh my god, of course.
I'm so curious. I don't know. I feel like the media's had so many big stories. Do you guys have any insight? Like what's going on with that in this fight? Has he said anything about his camp and weight cut? I mean,
Harrington, did we talk about this on Monday? I'm not sure if we did or not. Maybe we touched on it very briefly or not at all.
No, we didn't touch on it. I saw the story come across. I don't know if you guys know the details on this one.
I read a story that, yes, of course, he was arrested for DUI, and then there was a firearm in there, so he had another pending charge for unlawful possession of a firearm, I think it was. But his lawyer, I saw a statement from his lawyer. His lawyer came back and said, look, listen, when the blood test comes back, all charges are going to be dropped. Any pending charges will be dropped. Of course, that's what they're going to say. They're going to claim that there wasn't much. And it is, listen, I do not advocate drink driving at all. I never do that. It's a disgusting thing. And obviously people lose a lot of lives. But if you just had a glass of wine or something with dinner, you know, so it's hard. You see that headline and it may just be he had a glass of wine, maybe two, you know what I mean? And which you shouldn't do anyway. And he's got behind the wheel. But when you see the headline, you kind of have this idea in your head that he's absolutely hammered drunk, shooting fucking guns, driving down right. The highway, yippee-ki-yay. Do you know what I mean? So maybe it wasn't like that. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt because I'm thinking 10 good days on you, man. Out from a fight? 10
That's
days,
what I'm
what
thinking.
Are you playing at?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to push away the danger and the irresponsibility of what happened or could have happened. We don't know the full story, but I'm just thinking from a fighter perspective, why was he drunk and driving 10 days before a fight? I mean, like you kind of cut off even like a sip of a, I mean, I don't know about you, Mike, but like, I'm not having a beer within like, I don't know, man, 4 weeks. That was me like a month out, you know, I'm not really,
I did 2 months. I would allow myself the occasional glass of wine, but for 2 months, yeah, I switched off completely, you know, a glass of wine here and there. And I'll be honest, there was always one night where I kind of fell off the wagon and then like one turns into three or something. And my wife starts lecturing. I'm like, shit, I know. But I'm ahead of my schedule. Days. I'm ahead. Yeah. 10 days out. No way.
I mean, 10 days out, I'm thinking about like what superfoods am I putting in my body, much less alcohol is like not even a thought.
Who was the guy? Oh, what was his name? He was one of Tito Ortiz's guys, Melvin Gillard.
Yeah.
Remember Melvin Gillardi tested positive for cocaine?
Oh, well, yeah, that was a couple of
guys. He tested positive for cocaine on the fight night drug test. Cocaine only stays in your system for 48 hours. That was the one that always blew my mind. I'm like, what kind of crazy?
Well, John, too. I mean, if we're bringing that up, John Jones was the other one that you know, it was him in the DC bout that John Jones tested positive for cocaine as well.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
That was
John Jones was supposed to fight DC in Vegas. John Jones tested positive. And I think that's when DC ended up having to fight Anthony Johnson. That could have been what it was. And John Jones had that great comeback.
He said, yeah.
Or maybe it was a previous fight. I might be mixing the story, but John Jones definitely got in trouble.
Hey. You mentioned cocaine and hookers, and Brian's your man, Brian.
He's like, dang.
he told DC he beat him after a weekend of cocaine and alcohol.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to tell you guys.
That was Cocaine and hookers. Of cocaine.
Say again, Brian.
It was Gustafson. He said that he beat Gustafson after a weekend of cocaine and hookers. No way.
Yeah. Ballsy guy. I mean, Jeff Neal, great fighter. Great. I think he's got a tough fight on his hands because he's flat footed. He's got heavy hands. He's coming off two losses, I think. Last one to Wonderboy. And then, is it two? I think he's lost his last two. Wonderboy.
I don't know.
I don't know.
The last one I remember is Wonderboy, but I'm not certain about it.
Oh, and Neil Magny as well. Neil Magny. Thank you, Brian. Ponzinibbio. Did you see his last fight against Miguel Baeza?
Man, I didn't see that fight. How did he look in that one?
Dude. Well, he got off to a tough start. Miguel Baeza was
the young Miguel. Yeah, young, yeah. Tall. Yeah.
Caramel Thunder, as he's known in certain circles. That's what they call him. Yeah, wow. Good looking kid. Caramel Thunder. Got the skin tone. I'm not sure I could pull it off. Good fight. I got Ponzinibbio in that one. Just because I like his style. And I think that two losses in a row, I think maybe a little of the confidence may diminish from Neil. I don't know. I'm gonna say Santiago.
I mean, I'll tell you this. If I didn't see the DUI headlines, I probably would have leaned towards Neil just because he's got that. He's a finisher, man. He's a power puncher. I'd give him the edge. I don't know the backstory. I mean, I want to say that it was like you that made.
Well, it's a lot of distraction as well. It's a big distraction. It's negative press. It's a lot of negativity. No doubt. I don't know if he's a married man or whatnot, but I know for damn sure that if it was 10 days out from my fight and I was plastered all over the newspapers and the websites for being drunk with a DUI and illegal firearm 10 days out from my fight, my life would not be a bed of roses right now.
No.
And that's not what you need going into a fight.
It's a big distraction. You know what? I think we haven't seen much media from them. I mean, there's a lot of big names on the card, but maybe Neil might have even opted out of it. He might want to just – because you don't want to get that question sprung on you if he's got something that he's trying to keep in the closet or whatever it is. He might be saying, yeah, salvage the next 10 days and just go into fight mode, keep the blinders on, stay in the fighter hotels, not leave the room.
Yeah, if you're Jeff Neal, if you're Jeff Neal and they ask you about that, you just start slagging off DC's commentary. He's like, hey, listen, guys, I mute the fucking TV. Do you know what I mean? My God. Yeah. Oh, dear. I got Santiago. Should be a good one, though. Harrington, come on, my friend. Show us. Is there anything that we're, any storylines from this week? Obviously, you have the finger computer at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. I do not have that. I'm locked in. I'm dialed in. There's no Google. There's no nothing. There's no cheat sheets other than these 20 odd I have here. what are we missing, Harrington?
There's two big fights you guys haven't touched on yet. One of them, Josh Emmett, you know, former top five ranked featherweight versus Dan 50K Ige. That seems like it's going to be a barn burner. I want to hear you guys break that one down.
I just want to hear, I want to have some gossip and have a fucking laugh, though, Harrington. We can go down into analytical city if you want. I mean, Dan Ige is incredible to watch. Josh Emmett is even better to watch. I mean, that guy is phenomenal. Every time he fights, he brings so much violence to the table. The power he has in his hands, the chin that he has. Again, I always go back to that fight between Shane Burgos and Josh Emmett. Josh Emmett won, I think it was in the third round, late in the third round. It was just an amazing fight. And after, and Josh Emmett, remember, he's had a few fights that kind of fit that kind of description. He's all action every time, as is Dan Ige, and that's why he's at the top of the prelims.
I wonder how the betting people have this fight range, because that's got to be a pick 'em. I mean, two guys and kill or be killed in that fight, but that'll be a fun one. I'm gonna go the other way, man. I'm gonna go with 50K.
Oh yeah, well, you know, Dan Ige is good. Cannot underestimate that guy. So how long you been retired now, Alan?
Man, I haven't fought. It's been about a year since I fought, but I retired about, you know, 6 months ago or so.
And is retired life treating you well? You liking it?
Yeah, man, I'm still figuring it out, Mike. I'm still trying to get a hold of this. You retired and you had a lot of stuff to keeping you busy, right? And I'm learning that, like, I feed off of the busyness, man, because when you're fighting, you wake up with that purpose every morning. It's simple. I go to the gym and I train. That's my purpose. And then when you finish fighting, you find new purposes. And so I'm trying to accumulate more of them, if that makes any sense. I want to work more with the UFC, with the LFA, doing other endeavors that I'm doing. But not having that gym that was just so easy. It was a no-brainer. You go and it's hard training, but you don't have to think. And you're consumed by it. I'm trying to find more stuff to do now, man.
Yeah, but that is definitely part of the challenge. You know, these and you're a smart guy and you got a lot of contacts and whatnot. I'm sure you'll get there eventually. Do you ever miss it? That's what people always ask me. And of course, because I'm there in the apex a lot, just like you. Yeah. I see these people now. I mean, for me, it's been a bit longer. I've been retired now for 4 years. So maybe I've gone soft. But when I see them fighting, I see some of these performances that put on and they're 6 feet away from me. These guys are fucking crazy. I'm like, they are out of their minds. And then I think back that I used to do that, but still, it's crazy. I think I've gone soft. I've definitely got older. I'm 42 now. Do you know what I mean? But you're still around it. You're still in the apex. You're still very much a part of the show. For me, that's what scratches that itch, shall we say. I'm still involved with the sport to a certain degree.
Same, man. Being involved helps tremendously. I love it. It gives me that excitement. As far as, do I still get the itch? I'm a little bit the same as you, Mike. When I see it, when I see these guys fight, I look at everyone like a 21-year-old guy that hasn't been in that car wreck yet. You know, we've been in so many car wrecks already, and some of these guys have taken a lot of damage. But we know it's not fun being injured. It's not fun being hurt. Just want to be healthy now that we're at the stage in life. But the easy answer to this question every time for me, like when my wife or somebody says something like, "What are you getting excited? What, you getting the itch or something?" I go, in this body? No. Like, because I know what I could do. Like, there's no way. I watched your fight the other day. Somebody sent me one of my old fights, and I go, look how fast I was. I was fast, man. I got excited about watching. I was like, I was a gangster.
I know the feeling. I hit pads with Perillo sometimes, and I'm like, oh, I feel good. I feel good. And I watch you back. I'm like, holy shit, that was so slow. That was so slow. But I am older. Yes. I am heavier, you know what I mean? It does happen. My God.
But, just the transitions, the scrambles, the like my footwork, my my high kicks, like that stuff is diminished, man. And in this body, I can't do half as much as I could 2-3 years ago. And that's the truth. And so
imagine if you were in Harrington's body.
In
Harrington's body. Imagine Harrington showing himself.
Yeah. So
I almost just mopped him up while he was picking his nose.
Oh, you should have done. You should have done. You know, Harrington trains these days. Harrington, you versus Alan Jaban. Alan Jaban of today, of course. Not Alan. No. You just heard him. He's slow these days. His body's out of shape.
How old are you, Harrington?
I'm 33. But let me just point out something. You're downplaying it. I saw you fighting a month ago at Skankfest, right? I was on that card. What you were doing, like, you know, walking through the motion, sleepwalking, would have easily put me to sleep. So no. Goodness. I'm not taking Skank that fight ever.
That wasn't fighting though. Well, I mean, it was the motions of fighting, but when you're fighting people that don't really fight, then you can kind of get away with a lot. So it might have made me look
good. I hate that. It's the worst. Fighting someone that doesn't really know what they're doing, because you just end up getting hit with stupid shit that would never land in a million years. Anyway, it's almost Christmas. We've been going for over an hour now. So last 10 minutes or so. What is Christmas in your house? What is, how are you going to spend it this year?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, man, it's just at home this year, but it's our first year back in Lafayette, Louisiana. So I'm going to have all my family finally. So we'll do that, man. Have all the family over, go to one of their houses and have a good one.
What do you have for dinner? Because we always have the same thing. We have turkey. This is a big thing in our house this year. We're trying to figure out, we want to do something different. We're sick of turkey. Okay. Every year, every Christmas, for God knows how long, we're doing something different this year.
You got to have turkey.
I know.
Kind of like, it's like a Christmas tree goes up.
Lucas was almost crying at the thought of no turkey. And we're like, okay, yeah. You little shit, you little spoiled son of a gun. We'll have a little bit of turkey, but we're trying to do something different. But is that what you do, the regular? You know, because we do normally turkey with Yorkshire puddings. You got to try Yorkshire puddings, roast potatoes, roast carrots, Brussels sprouts, sausages wrapped in bacon. We call pigs in blankets with gravy, stuffing, of course. I think that's about it. But I'm starving now.
I love it. No, man, that's all like the traditional stuff. We do the same thing. If you want to mix it up, I don't know if you're going to be into this, but if you want to mix it up.
Don't say tamales. Because people keep saying to me out here, tamales. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not Mexican. But tamales are gross.
But tamales are good.
If you want to try something terrible, you're eating straw.
If you want to still have the turkey, Mike, and do something different, turducken is something they do in Louisiana. Turducken, turkey, duck, and chicken, all stuffed in one. I think Dana might have teased it or something. Turducken. It's a chicken, a duck and a chicken and a turkey all in one with a bunch of seasoning and dressing, and then you get, three different flavors right there. So you can try that out, man, and you still have the traditional turkey. So
yeah, but that sounds like a lot of work. Turducken. Oh, you just have you just cook a bit of turkey, but
it's all in one, man. You buy it compact, it's wrapped, it's seasoned, it's done. You pop it in the oven. There
it is. Serves 18 to 20. My God.
170. Look at that. 170 for that damn turducken.
Yeah, but that's not bad though. It serves 20.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never bought a turkey.
Not bad at all. All right, buddy. All right. Well, I think we got some questions, Alan. Brian, do we have any questions, by the way, from the Gmail?
Yeah, I do have one question. Just give me 1 second to pull them up.
All right. Go. I've got some questions for you on Twitter as well, Alan. I'm just trying to see if you make sure there's some that are suitable.
So you don't have anything to do with Discord, huh, Mike? You just were over there doing some stuff?
Literally for BT Sport, which I'm happy because obviously I do the commentary, which I love. You know, I did what you did for many years and was able to graduate, if you will. And then BT Sport reached out to me a while ago, started doing a bit of work with them. So, yeah, I just came and did some interviews for them, which is kind of weird, you know, for me still to this day. I'm getting better and it started to feel more natural at it.
Sitting
down and interviewing them because it's just weird because I was always the guy on the other side. You know what I mean? And it's not an ego thing. It's just I feel a little strange. It's not that my ego won't allow me to do it. It's nothing to do with that. I'm transitioning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not into a woman. into a skilled, polished broadcaster. Yeah. But you know,
it
feels alien.
And you know the answer to most of these questions, but you have to think of something to make it personal towards them. I know, man. I go through the same thing all the time, man.
All right. River Chukara says, do you have any regrets from your career?
Do I, is it for me?
Yeah, this is for you.
Man, you know, that's an interesting question. So a fighter friend of mine last week in LFA asked me the same thing, or if you could have done something differently or give me some advice type of question. And I was like, damn, we're at a bar. I was like, this is a deep question to be at a bar at.
Yeah, but, yeah. It's not just a like, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a great one. Right. Yeah, cheers, mate.
Like,
leave me alone.
In her ear. But you know what came to mind, Mike? And honestly, I don't know if I would have done this, but this is my best advice that I would give a young fighter. And if I could have done it all over again, I might have adjusted and done this. Be more vocal, sell yourself. Because being on this side of the camera, as you just mentioned, interviewing fighters, when a fighter comes into a meeting and says, I just feel like I'm better than them everywhere and I'm getting better and blah, 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 you're not giving me anything. It's all that goes out the window. I didn't take any notes. I'm just going to tell you what I know about you. But when you say something meaningful, you sell yourself, or you do the Sugar Sean O'Malley, or you do the Conor McGregor, or anything, even if it's Dustin Poirier talking about his daughter, give me something with purpose. Give me something that strikes emotion or meaning, and I'm going to remember that. And I wish I would have done more of that. One time, Breck Okamoto interviewed me after a fight, and it was somebody else, but they brought up my son, and I got teary-eyed, man, and I didn't mean to, but I know how
emotional. Yeah, but that's anytime, and I'm not interrupting, I'm just chiming in with you there. Anytime the children get involved, I used to be the same thing. Same I always way. Get teary-eyed.
It's a weak spot, but what I'm getting at is when I saw that, I go, holy shit, like people were telling me like it gave them chills or whatever. And I go, man, I wish I would have found more ways to do that, to resonate.
To invoke those kind of emotions from people, you mean?
To your fan base. It makes you. So I would have done that, man. That's my only regret. Maybe not having more of those type of moments.
Right. I've got to ask this. A lot of people want to know about your skincare regime, believe it or not. I swear to God, there's a lot of people want to know about your hair products that you use.
What?
I don't know who follows me.
My fan base
is very metrosexual. What's wrong with that?
It's like the Bravo Network over here.
It's 2021. Where we are aligned with the entertainment network. Where was it though? All right. Whose side are you on when it comes to the DC Dominic Cruz drama? About five people have asked that one.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm looking at it from the big picture, yeah, you got a feel for DC. He got called out in our kind of circle of commentators, our circle of fighters, our circle of both. Dominic kind of crossed the line. But
yep.
I'm not mad at Dominic because it wasn't directed towards me. And as I said in the beginning of the show, man, that guy is a savage. And like, I have a newfound respect for him just for having the balls to do that. Although I don't think it was right.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, because DC was the victim in all of that. You know, he should have stayed out of it. I know we're going back to the start of the show, but we're going to finish on this. Yeah, it was a little tasteless. But if you know Dominic, it's how he is. It's how he carries himself. You know what I mean? I don't know why he decided to say that. Only Dominic knows that. But whatever. I'm not here to talk shit about Dom and you know. It's a weird one. I feel for DC because DC's a nice guy.
Yeah, and Dominic created huge headlines, though, with that. When I was looking at Twitter earlier, before you texted me, there was nothing about Poirier anymore and this and that. It was all DC, this and that. Dan Hardy's, like, asking all these questions.
Oh, what is going on with Dan Hardy? Dan Hardy's talking shit. You see that?
Dan's been very vocal lately. He was having a ball with this, and I know why, because Dan obviously got into some issues with the commentary thing and was parted ways with the UFC, obviously. And so this kind of sprung something inside of an emotion. So he wanted to kind of get the people's take on it. But man, Twitter's blowing up because of this. He stole the headlines.
Yeah, no, you're right. Just on what you said there about Dan Hardy, I saw on Twitter this morning. I didn't get back from Vegas till like 2 o'clock in the morning, but my wife still woke me up with a coffee at 6:30. I'm like, do you do realize what time I got in last night, don't you?
But still, whatever.
No, it's a bad thing. I'm bad. Okay. I didn't get until almost 2 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, what was I saying? So I'm scrolling Twitter, having my coffee, and I see it there. She said, yeah. How do you feel about a UFC analyst paying someone else to do their research? Okay, not that one. Just go through to some of the others.
Yeah.
There's one that he says. He says, I've got another question for you. How would you feel if somebody in the truck was breaking down jiu-jitsu moves or something for somebody? Just see if you can find that tweet. There it is. How would you feel if some UFC analyst had a person in the truck backstage talk them through technical parts of the fight to relay and commentary? Okay, so I'm assuming, and I don't know this, I'm assuming he's talking about DC here, right? And here's what my wife said. Well, first of all, DC does not need somebody from the truck to tell them how to break down technical elements, right? DC can break down the grappling transitions as good as anybody on planet Earth. And he also knows how to box. Let's not forget the fucking guy knocked out Stipe Miocic in the first round. He was a double champ. He knows how to fight. But my wife, who has nothing to do with it, she actually came up with a point because I was like, come on, Dan, don't be saying that. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she says, well, hold on a minute. The people in the truck, that's the producers, the director, everyone behind the scenes, their goal is to give the viewer the best product possible. So regardless of how that product gets to the viewer, it doesn't matter if someone in the truck like gets in your ear and says, maybe, hey, just break this down or gives you a little tip. I'm not saying that they do that, but I'm saying, but even if they did, so fucking what? If it makes the final product better, then that is better for the viewer and it is overall a better product. So I don't even understand the purpose of that tweet, but the context is irrelevant as well.
Well, I'm very curious if Dan was just being vague or like, what do you think about this? Or if this was actually an incident that he's referring to. I'm curious. I don't know what he's referring to. But I'll say this. I love it when producers get in my ear because it's like a cornerman, right? We're in the fight, but we're the commentators. And so we're doing what we see. We need people from outside angles. And I love it when a producer goes, hey, man, there's a great element to this. You know, the guy's ex-girlfriend's in the other corner. Make sure and bring that up. I love that. I go, oh, you know what? I didn't think about this. And you got to think about this, guys. This is weighing on his mind right now. So I love having extra elements added to that. And for the grappling part, DC, the only thing I could think of, if we're referring to DC from that tweet, which I'm not sure we are, is in the jiu-jitsu department, maybe sometimes we mess up. We say, oh, look, he's doing a Peruvian, but it's really some other neck.
Minor details, though, but we got horses for courses. You got a good guy that understands jiu-jitsu. You got DC when it comes to wrestling and experience has been there. You got John Anik or Brendan for the play-by-play guys. You know, and just on what we were talking there about somebody in the truck, when I first started doing commentary, to your point there, the producers would be in my ear a lot more, not telling me what to say, but guiding me on how to be a better commentator. For example, say, Mike, what does this guy need to do here? Explain it to the viewer. And I think, oh, okay, because I'm an amateur commentator. You know, I've done it for a few years now, but when I first started, it's new to me. I'm calling the action, but then they just remind me, hey, Mike, explain to the viewer what this person could do to escape this position, to better his position, or to give him a better chance of winning this fight in general. I'm like, oh, that's a really good note. Thank you. And as you become a more and more experienced commentator, they get less and less in
you
your ear.
Doing it.
But they're trying to just fucking make us better. You know, it's a great thing.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I honestly, every time I do color commentary, whoever's producing this show, I say, get in my ear. I say, if you see something I'm not saying, let me know. And then I also say, when I'm in the middle of it, when I'm interviewing them, tell me their name again, because I always forget their freaking name when after a long interview or something. I think my worst fear.
No, of course. All right. Well, listen, we've been going for a little bit there. We'll leave you to it. Yeah. Brian, did we have any suitable questions to finish off with?
We do have a question here, but I think Harrington has some stuff to plug before we go to question.
Oh, yes, please, Harrington, go ahead. Be my guest from the 1970s fucking time travel machine.
I'm so glad you are apparently
broadcasting from. My God. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me just work on this crank here to get this going. If you enjoy the show, want to submit a question, head on over to bympod@gmail.com. Send that in. You know, any kind of music works, written questions work, but we really do prefer video because this is a multimedia show. If you're listening to this on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, click that subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, click subscribe and make sure to hit that notifications bell so you know whenever any new episodes comes out. And if you enjoy the show and want to catch over 300 episodes you can't find anywhere else, head on over to gasfuelnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get yourself a 7-day free trial. Check out 25 great shows on the network. Oh, also merch.
Well said.
BYMmerch.com.
BYMmerch.com. New designs coming soon. All right. We'll finish on a question then, Brian, as long as it's suitable, please.
Yeah, it's definitely MMA related.
Okay.
This one,
Alan, some of the questions we've had.
They get strange.
Yeah, because he has to beforehand. He says, Mike, I've got a question, but I'm not. And I'm like, whoa, no. We cannot air that.
That's good.
Yeah, people send in like weird music suggestions and all sorts
of things. Dick pics. They were sending in dick pics, really? Not to me. People,
wow.
There was a guy who was trying to hide a dick in every video question. So he'd just ask a very innocuous question and just have like hardcore gay porn playing.
To be fair, TV. That sounds hilarious.
It was very funny. That's I just that can't
Ellis
play
Mania,
that.
Jason Ellis crossover
yeah.
crowd.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. All right, Brian.
Well,
what
here's
do we
an
have?
MMA related question from Mitch.
What's up, Mike? My question for you is, who do you think the UFC should pair with Patty the Batty next? And also, do you think they are going to string Nate along with his last fight to make with Conor? Seeing I don't think they thought he was really going to fight Hamzat. And, you know, they have to offer them so many fights a year. Let me know what you think. Thanks.
Well, thank you for the question, Brett.
Good question,
thank you for
yeah.
the support. Yeah, being the guest and being the gentleman and the scholar, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, you're bringing it to me.
Well, Paddy the Baddy, actually, next yeah. opponent, what do you think? I'm just looking up the rankings.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up, to be honest, man. But I like, as I mentioned earlier, about making yourself known out there. I worked the desk when he made his UFC debut, and it was so much fun, man. He brings in the masses. He's got a big fan following. He knows how to talk the talk. He made a very exciting fight. He's got to tighten up some things inside the UFC. I don't have a guy for him to fight. I'd have to look at the rankings. I'm going to lean on you for that one, Mike. But I'm very, very excited to see him fight again. And what a muscular. I mean, I think it was a picture with you, Mike, or something on his Instagram. The guy looks huge. The guy looks like a massive guy for the weight division.
Yeah, fat would be a better word right now. He calls himself Paddy the Fatty.
Massive fat.
Yeah. But he's massive for the weight class. No, he put a few pounds on, but I'm sure he needs to stop doing that.
But he used to be skinny. Back in the day, he was very skinny. He's kind of got a man body.
Yeah, but he's got to stop doing that. I mean, that's one of my big regrets. When someone said before any regrets, one of mine was allowing myself to balloon the weight. You know, in between training camps, I go up and down, up and down. Now it's weird. I mean, it doesn't look like it today. But I take better care of myself now than I did when I was fighting, which is so stupid of me. But still, yeah, I'm looking at the lightweight rankings. And to be honest, I wouldn't put him in there with any of these guys just yet. It'd be too soon. Number 15 is Joel Alvarez. I don't know if you saw his fight recently. Joel Alvarez is doing major things, and I think he's going to be a star. Brad Riddell's 14. Armin Sarukian is 13. Diego Ferreira, and then Rafael Fiziev, and then Gregor Gillespie, Conor McGregor. I mean, fucking lightweight is stacked.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure somebody unranked right now, because I think after one fight in the promotion, throwing him in there against one of those guys would be a little step too soon. Harrington, you got anybody? Jared Gordon called him out last week.
That's who it was. That's what I was going to say. Gordon, heavy pressure grappler. That'd be an interesting matchup. He's not ranked either, right? It'd be kind of a good, like, see where he's really at in the division.
And that would be a favorable match, but not favorable, but a decent stylistic matchup, because Paddy's actually got really good jiu-jitsu. And we know Jared Gordon, he's going to look to probably try and take you down as well. He'd like a wrestle heavy game plan. And then what was the second part of the question? Brian?
Nate Diaz. Do you think they're going to play out his career and have the trilogy fight?
I mean, he'd have to stick around for a long time for that. You know,
you mean nobody, for Conor to come back?
Yeah, nobody knows other than Conor when he's going to come back. Probably sometime mid next year, right? That's what he was saying, right?
He kind of teased, like maybe
he can spar in June or something.
6 months from now, but shit, I mean, Nate doesn't fight, but every couple of years anyway, it seems like. Yeah. I think that could happen. I don't know timeline wise if they need something to happen sooner, but Nate doesn't like fighting anybody unless it's a money fight, right? And then Conor, they need a win right now. And Coach Kavanaugh said in the interview, that's the fight that he wants. So, you know, he's planting seeds in Conor's ear right now. We need a comeback fight. Let's test the engine out. Let's see how the body's working. This is a favorable matchup. We already know how to beat him. He's been inactive, yada, yada, yada. I can see them coming back, making a 20 mil type of get some momentum going. And then at that point, you're like, who's the champion at this point? Is it Poirier? Is it Oliveira? Does Poirier retire pretty soon? Like, I don't see him fighting much longer. I think he fights this title fight and maybe one more. I don't really see him more than two more fights after this.
He said he's going to stick around, but he said in terms of fighting three fights a year, he said those days are over. He said it's going to be more like one, two at a stretch. But going back to Nate Diaz, you know, just listening to you talk about Diaz and Conor 3, the more I listen to that, the more it makes sense. Because if I'm the UFC, right, and if Nate Diaz wants to fight out his contract and go his separate way, of course, that's his right. He's entitled to do so. But of course, if you're the UFC, you also played a part in building his star and marketing him and putting on these great fights that made him a lot of money. You want to capitalize on him whilst he's still under contract. And there is no bigger fight. I'm just speaking from a business perspective. There's no bigger fight right now that Nate Diaz can be involved with, I would say, than Conor McGregor 3. They're one apiece. The trilogy's out there waiting to happen. So yeah, if I was them, book that matchup. Maybe if there is some issues with timelines and contracts, I don't know if there is, but if there was, you can still offer it on a certain day that Conor feels that he would be able to return on. That way, everybody's a winner. Conor gets a big fight to come back. Nate Diaz gets a gigantic fight to leave. The UFC, if they do go separate ways with Nate Diaz, they all go separate ways on a great business enterprise. Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense.
And I bet both guys, not only they've both got to win over one another and they both are going to make money, so that's kind of the obvious. But I feel like deep down inside, both guys think that's the easiest, the more favorable matchup. Like Conor's like, yeah, I'll beat up Nate again. And Nate's like,
I don't know about that, man.
You don't think Conor feels confident that he would smoke Nate?
Feels confident against everybody. And that's kind of what makes him so great, but that's also kind of his downfall at the same time. That kind of confidence is always a double-edged sword. I had it. A lot of fighters have that.
He's confident in himself, right? But okay, maybe I can't use Conor because he is so confident.
Look at Diaz against Leon Edwards.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying Diaz,
he got smoked before that. He was getting beat up before that. I mean, he came back. He's a gangster.
He got
worked before that. But if you're Coach Kavanaugh or whoever's, you know, helping him make these decisions, Conor kind of runs his own ship. But if you're whispering in his ear, are you saying, do we want that Poirier rematch or do we want that Nate Diaz rematch coming out of surgery? Like, Diaz seems like a much easier fight for him than coming against
Diaz,
in my mind.
All day. And speaking of all days, I've got my day to get back to. Alan Joe Ban. That is the end of the Believe You Me podcast. Thank you very much. Really, really appreciate you taking the time out to do this.
Fun, man.
Brian and Harrington, can we get a universal round of applause for the great Alan Joe Ban, please? Come on. Come on. Am I the only? Come on.
Hey,
everybody.
Hey,
what a guy. What a guy. Alan, thank you on behalf of all the believers from Brian and Harrington and myself, of course. Have a wonderful Christmas with your family. And hope to see you. Are you working next weekend?
I'm on. Are you next weekend?
18th?
Yeah.
I'll see you there, buddy.
It's a fun card, too, man. I'm excited for that one.
Oh, yeah. Who is that? Who's the main event? Hold on.
Derek Lewis, but it's also Bilal Muhammad and Wonderboy and Nakoma. Like, they gave us some fights on this fight. They gave us some fun ones on this fight night.
No, that's a good one. That's a good run. All right. Well, listen, thanks again, Alan. Really, really appreciate it. And, have a great Christmas. Talk to you soon.